You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 20th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, ladies and gentlemen. You know what that means. Cliff Schechter will be joining us to talk about the week in news. Also on the program today, to give me a movie recommendation for the weekend and to talk about his movie, which is coming out, Dean Obadalla, the movie The Muslims Are Coming. Also on the program today, government shutdown looming, but now indications maybe President Obama's going to let John Bonner off the hook. Also, the Department of Justice never probed the NSA complaints that came from two FISA court judges. When those FISA court judges said it was so bad they may shut down the whole surveillance program, the Department of Justice never followed up on what they said was problematic with the surveillance. And the hammer gets a reprieve. Is it temporary? That's right, folks. I'm talking about Tom DeLay. Remember the bug man? Well, an appeals court overturned his conviction. And meanwhile, food stamps. House Republicans yesterday voted to throw 3.5 million Americans off of food stamps, and about 3 million per year over the next 10 years, in what can only be described as warped and twisted. I don't really know how else to describe this. I was on All In with Chris last night, debating a Grover Norquist acolyte, and it was one of the more bizarre debates I've ever had. I want to remain polite, and I am always one of the, I'm trying to say this in a polite way, folks. I am always surprised by the lack of even cynical arguments that can be articulated by the right wing when they are forced to justify their policies. Mendacity, okay, fine. You can argue with somebody, they're lying, but at least they're well-practiced. But it's as if these people never even question, they even amongst themselves, they don't even have debates about this. It is mystifying. We'll talk more about it as the show progresses. But I was both flummoxed. When I came into the office, Michael said to me, you know, if people didn't know you and they saw you on that show, they may not pick up on the cues. But I saw several distinct occasions where you were, one, trying not to laugh in this person's face, two, trying not to make it look like you were beating up on somebody, like, you know, stealing a ball from a child. And yes, restraint was the watchword for me last night. Also, we'll talk about the new Pope continuing to impress. Apparently, he doesn't think that the church should be so obsessed with homophobia or being homophobic, being anti-choice, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a change necessarily in doctrine, but he's certainly saying, like, hey, folks, priorities, please. And what I learned yesterday from watching Matt on television was that a like on Facebook could be considered a First Amendment protected political speech. We'll get into that also in the program. And just an update on the app, ladies and gentlemen. We have broken into the top 100 free news apps on iTunes. We've also done very well on Android. The app is getting stellar reviews. Some Android users are having trouble downloading it from the Google Marketplace. And part of that is because Android is an open platform. It is virtually impossible to get 100% compatibility with any native Android app. We went with a native app as opposed to just a skin, which would just provide links for you. Maybe ultimately we'll come up with one that is just a skin for people who have been locked out. There also may be a way for us to do an end run around the Google Marketplace, have direct downloads from our site, which would mean that if you were to update it, you would have to come and manually update it each time. There's really nothing we can do. We have an app on Android that is 93% compatible, which is really in the stratosphere in terms of compatibility for Android apps. So bear with us. We will try and fix that. We've got nothing but rave reviews on the app on the iPhone and iPad platform. iOS 7, which was also released yesterday, which we didn't know about, now requires everybody, the first time you get an app after that release, to sign a form that says you agree to the new iTunes usage terms. That has nothing to do with us. It's just a coincidence. We wanted to release it on Kyle's birthday, and also and Apple apparently wanted to release iOS 7 on the day that we released our app. So that's just a coincidence. We're also aware that in iOS 7, there's a slight pixel size problem. So you don't have on the play of the podcast play, you cannot reach the speed up button. We will fix that in the first update. But I wanted to let you know that. I also wanted to thank those of you who have hit the donate button on the app. It's on the support page. We're not anywhere close to paying off the app, but we're on the road and you can't get to your destination unless you first get on the road, unless you want to go off-roading, and then other obstacles may come up. You may not have a vehicle that allows you to go off-road. And I'm saying all that just because I just read that Tom Friedman piece again and my metaphors are all screwed up. But I do appreciate any donation you can give to support the development of that app. Even though Kyle really helped us out and came in a price point well under the $50,000, the $60,000, the $63,000, I was quoted by one company to do a native Android and a native iPhone app.
With not even half of the features in this application.
Definitely. Not even nearly as good. It still was an expensive app, particularly for a tiny operation like ours. So if you can donate, much appreciated, or just become a member. Get it over with, folks. You'll have access to 200 shows at your fingertips. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter.
your mind.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. And on the phone, the wonderful Cliff Schechter, but we can't talk to Cliff without first opening up the chasm in the time-space portal by playing the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The Jimmy Reefer Cake theme song introducing the wonderful Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well. Sam, the time-space chasm.
Yeah.
Are you playing with your flux capacitor again?
Dude, I'm a little freaked out because I just saw a report that said that some scientists may have found life from outer space.
Really? Wow.
Not like some type of like humanoid thing, but just like some type of small organism or bacteria or something that didn't have something. Not bacteria, something like life. I don't know.
You and I need to go get ourselves a hold of a DeLorean.
Yeah.
Jack that sucker up.
Do it.
And go investigate.
And I know what you mean by jack that sucker up. I'm familiar with DeLorean's fall from grace.
Sam, where were we going? We need roads. Okay, I'll stop now.
All right. So, Cliff Schechter. Let's talk about how we started off this week. I mean, it is... I honestly cannot count the times that and just to set the groundwork here, longtime listeners will know that that Cliff has been highly involved over the years in some type of gun safety reform in this country, and worked for at various times for Mayors Against Guns and other advocacy groups. I don't think you're doing so at the moment, but nevertheless, this is a topic that I know is you're extremely passionate about. And I can't count the number of times on my hand how we have had this weekly recap where we've had to talk about another gun massacre.
Yeah. You know, in fact, as I remember, we were actually on the radio while Newtown was happening. And we didn't know exactly how bad it was going to be at that moment. We just knew that there had been a Connecticut school shooting. And we're still seeing, but yes, you know, it's like, it just, the whole thing it's so morbidly tiring, so disgustingly sort of, you know, it's banal almost at this point. Oh, another gun shooting, you know, any other civilized country would be freaked out of their minds by this and immediately say, what do we need to do to address this problem? That's what happened in Australia in 1996. The infamous Port Arthur massacre. They finally had, they'd been having one of these things a year. We're having like one of them a month. And Australia finally just said, you know what, enough. And the conservative government there at the time went and enacted all the kinds of reforms that we need to enact, from banning assault weapons to registration of firearms and a variety of things. And guess what? Magically, I know, you know, the NRA can't accept this because more guns obviously equals more safety for all of us. But there has not been the 17 previous years, they had like one a year in Australia, and they have now had none since 1996. This is what countries do that are civilized. This is how they look at public health problems, whether it's smoking, gun violence, you know, drunk driving. This is how you handle it. You look at the science, you look at the research, you address the problem.
It really is stunning, and I think to a certain extent, you know, the response to this was, I mean, like you say, it's become banal in some respects. It was barely there was a couple of questions thrown at a couple of senators. Any chance to revive gun control in any fashion? Nah, probably not. And then everybody just moves on. And you know, I mean, the reality is because we have a larger sort of cultural problem in this country that is just the out. I don't know what it's going to take at this point. I mean, if the slaughter of dozens of children doesn't do it, I don't know what's going to do it until, you know, I don't know until someone maybe it's going to take like some celebrity or some horrible tragedy that sort of I really don't know.
I would say to you that the only what it's going to take at this point are a combination of things, which are reforming our campaign finance system, which obviously holds so much common sense legislation hostage. Obviously, it's the NRA, and it really the NRA is just a front group. It's as I always make the comparison to the big banks, to big oil. This is big guns. It's the same thing. It is people that are making millions, gazillions of dollars off of the death of members of your family and your friends. And that's just the simplest way to put it. We can sugarcoat if we'd like, but that's really what it comes down to. Just as they do when they destroy the Gulf of Mexico, the oil companies, just as the banks when they're fraudulently kicking you out of your home. And this is betting against what they're telling their customers to do and bankrupting an economy. This is the same situation. It's the 1% getting rich while people are literally dying, and they're getting rich because people are dying.
It is.
And there's just nothing else to it. This whole, well, we've got this history of hunting. So did Canada. So did Australia. You know, any excuse people come up with for why things are different here, I can dispense with within less than 10 seconds. And the only difference here is that money owns our politics right now.
It is a classic case of industry and corporations privatizing the profit and socializing the costs.
You have to get insurance for your car, you don't for a gun. Why? Because all the rest of us should pay the cost of shootings. Not the gun companies. You can't even sue them because of the bill passed in 2004, or it's very hard to, because they passed almost pretty much blanket immunity for themselves. I mean, it's all, again, about big business. That is what this is about in the end.
And those costs, you know, obviously are not just we're not just talking about money. I mean, we're talking about living in a society where this is not an issue. We're not, you know, or living in a society where we don't have to sort of come up with plans on how we're going to protect our children in schools and diverting resources there and diverting, sort of concern there. It really is stunning. I mean,
a guy puts a small, you know, bomb in his underwear and basically almost blows his penis off on an airplane, and you can be strip searched and have images of you naked floating around the internet for you to get on an airplane. We have people that are walking around literally, in the case of the gentleman, because I won't say his name as I don't think we should do with these guys, who just killed people in the Navy Yard, you know, somebody who had shot through the floor of the apartment above him in Fort Worth, Texas, after threatening the woman who lived above him. They did nothing about it. Who in Seattle had gotten mad at somebody and shot out the tires of their car. They did nothing about it. Who had called the police in Rhode Island just recently, months ago, and said he was hearing voices and there were people that followed him on his plane, and now we're listening to him through a microwave, you know, into his room, so he had to switch hotels three different times. Then he went to get serious, quote, medical treatment by the VA. He's somebody who was discharged from the Navy because he had been showing up late, he'd been showing up drunk, he had been getting into all sorts of altercations with people, and the list goes on. There's more things I can't even remember off the top of my head. This guy got in fights, I think, in Atlanta, Georgia. He got in a fight at a club where he attacked people. Clearly, we talk about universal background checks, and obviously that's necessary, because what you can get, you know, on the black market, what you can get right now actually very easily at a gun show or in a parking lot or online is a huge problem. But in this case, this guy was able to legally pass background checks. He actually went to licensed dealers because none of that, everything I just told you was not enough to have this man's gun rights taken away or at least even reviewed.
Right. And nothing. I mean, that's and that's a function of the depth of the background checks. We have expanding them in terms of point of purchase. And we also have coordinating them and making them deeper in terms of these. And, you know, we're not talking about go in and find out what this guy's, you know, sort of what he's buying and, you know, what magazine subscriptions he has. We're talking about if you go to the VA looking for help for mental illness, you should end up, it should be coordinated in such a way that you're on a background check saying, you know what, we're going to have to, this guy's going to have to wait 6 weeks. We're going to have to review the application. We're going to have to, I mean, there's going to have to be some further investigation into
it. It needs to not just be mental health anymore. Josh Horowitz, who's the head of the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, wrote a great piece for the Huffington Post where he said that, you know, that we need to reframe this as it's not just about mental health, it's about your dangerousness. And essentially, whether that's the fact that you have, because now it's only involuntary commitment. Well, if you voluntarily go and see someone at the VA and they declare that you're a danger, I'm sorry, that has to be a point in time where the gun is taken away. If you shoot someone's tires out, you know, I don't care if that means you're mentally, we decide that you are mentally fit or mentally unfit, couldn't care less. You've proven yourself once you shoot somebody's tires out because you're mad because they parked in front of your house that you are not fit to have a gun. And it really has to be an overall profile of, are you dangerous to society? And if you do something that means you are a danger, and these, it's pretty simple to declare what these things are because we're talking about them now. Discharge a firearm in a way that's dangerous to others without provocation. You know, I mean, being, you know, having to get serious medical treatment, telling people that you hear voices and are being followed. These are all things, you know, that should prevent it. And again, if we were to go through the list of the cases that have happened, you know, in recent years, whether it's the shooting at Virginia Tech by someone who had actually been declared mentally unfit by a court, but Virginia just didn't bother to share the record. Or Jared Loughner, who the Army had declared to be a habitual drug user, but didn't share the record. Or in the case of James Holmes, I shouldn't have said these names. I can't stand myself for doing that. Okay. In the case of Aurora, where you've got the shooter there, his own university had the doctors that treated him had to warn the university he was potentially a danger, but they didn't put his name into the system. These things don't make sense. All right, these are things where you're not going to prevent every case. And of course, in the case in Newtown, Connecticut, there never should have been an assault weapon there. Right? I mean, he hadn't been mentally committed yet. I don't know if his mom had even, you know, I know she'd spoken to people about him, but in that case, maybe a shooting would have happened no matter what we did. There are going to be those cases. They happen in other countries too that try to stop these things. But he wouldn't have had the kind of weapon he had that could have done that kind of damage. And, you know, really in almost all these cases, there are red flags that could have stopped or at least made these things less violent.
Yeah, and you know, and
listen, we just don't bother.
We don't
care.
I mean, the point is that, you know, it's a reasonable goal to say we're not going to be able to, the goal's not necessarily, or a reasonable goal to achieve is not necessarily to end all gun violence. But it is a reasonable goal to say, let's not have mass killings every 3 or 4 weeks in this country. I mean, that, yeah. So I understand that certain proposals will not end all of these incidents. But, you know, we know that this guy from the Navy Yard was not able to get an AR-15 because he was out of state in Virginia. So he ended up just getting a shotgun. Who knows how much more, how many more dead people there would be had he been able to get that assault weapon?
That's right.
And so,
no, we'll never end all of them, Sam. I mean, anybody, that's usually a red herring thrown out. Well, you can't stop it all, so let's not try to stop anything. I mean, if we applied that standard to all the rest of our laws and regulations, People would just look at you like you're a complete idiot. And
right.
People should look at these gun fondlers the same way.
All right.
I'll just say quickly, Japan, which probably has just about the strictest gun control in the world, still has 10 or 12 shootings every year. It's going to have – I mean, there will be a few cases. You can't stop everything.
Right.
And we've got twice their population, or something of that sort. So you know what? If we got to the point where we had even, let's say, 50 shootings a year in this country, wouldn't that just be amazing?
Right. And yeah, no one applies that to things like drunk driving. And, I mean, the list goes on. I mean, it's silly. But let's – all right. So speaking of really insane people who sort of – and this really gets to how – gun ownership is really not about Second Amendment rights. This is really not about freedom or unshackling ourselves from the oppression of the tyranny from the jackbooted thugs who are coming from the UN. This is really about a cultural identification. It really, in many respects, functions for the right in the same way that things like homophobia and misogyny do. It's obviously different, but it functions in the same way as a cultural a touchstone. And
yes.
Here's a perfect example of it. This is from the American Family Association radio show hosted by Sandy Rios. In response to Starbucks saying, you know, clarifying after they had said, look, we adhere to the right to the laws in each particular state in terms of a right to carry. And then following that, these right wingers held Starbucks Appreciation Days, including in Newtown, Connecticut, where this Sandy Hook shooting took place. And then Starbucks said, oh, my God, these people are completely insane. They issued a new proclamation. Please. We're not gonna have guards at our doors, but please leave your guns at home when you come to Starbucks. Here's the response by Sandy Rios from the American Family Association.
And speaking of shooting, you just wonder if the next one's going to take place at one of your favorite coffee establishments, because Starbucks has now a full page letter, I'm holding it up, in the Washington Post today, signed by I think it's Howard Schultz. I think that's his name. It's his script. It's in cursive, so I can't quite. I think it's Howard Schultz.
Now pause.
Who's the chairman?
You know, there's also here's a hint. This is off topic to Sandy Rios. You can Google who's the CEO of Starbucks if you can't read the name. Go.
If you're hosting a radio show, right. Maybe that's
God
you
forbid
want to
do any work other than just sort of drum up what is the most based and easy, low hanging fruit of cultural identification. Go ahead.
And president and CEO of Starbucks. Basically asking customers to stop bringing firearms to their stores or outdoors, even outdoors. So if you're a policeman, I guess, if you're an FBI agent, if you are any kind of officer, if you're in Texas, if you're in any Georgia where you can carry firearms in your purse, on your person, conceal and carry, no longer at Starbucks. Now, they're saying this is not an absolute. This is a request. Please don't bring your guns. And it goes on and on and on. And so, so here's an open letter, full page. I don't know if people like the shooter on Monday read the Washington Post or these treatises from people like Starbucks, but you just, John Lott, our professor, friend, who was our guest Tuesday, who is the leading academic on gun use in the United States, has some interesting statistics about the last... I can't recall the number, but several numbers of mass shootings, I think 80-90% of them took place in gun-free zones. You know, somehow as sick-minded as some of these people are, they manage to figure out where they can go and do this and not actually be killed themselves, although they often end up dead. But it's just amazing to me. So Starbucks, keep that in mind when you're going through Starbucks this morning, that don't be sure and don't take your gun through.
I don't even know. The level of stupidity here is stunning, but what's really
just
important...
Just say go when I can respond to this more.
Well, I mean, the level of stupidity here is stunning. Aside from that, it really is just about cultural identification, right? I mean, this is just... There's absolutely no point to what this woman is saying other than the fact that maybe a police officer might feel inhibited to go into Starbucks And if that's the case, then, you know, maybe someone who is mentally deranged might be aware that a cop might not be in there or might leave his gun in the car. I don't even know what it is.
Right.
It's insane.
Well, first of all, they're obviously it's proven to you, you know, that these guys, the same as those that always want to bomb other countries, act like tough guys when they're the scared little kids hiding under their beds because everything, oh, my God, somebody's gay or people who look different than me. They're like John Rocker in a New York City subway. They're freaked out of their minds because anybody might look different than them, act different than them. So they need their gun to protect themselves because they're emotionally their children, which is why Tea Partiers are generally the stupidest people you'll meet. In this particular case, there's a few things going on here. First of all, she's flat out lying. Mayors Against Illegal Guns did a large study which found that only in 23% of the cases, and by the way, I did consult them in the past. I don't currently, just to be clear. In 23% of the cases, these mass shootings were in gun-free zones. That's their new talking point, as if someone who's a lunatic thinks to themselves, I'm going to go where there are no guns. Because, of course, there are no guns at a Navy Yard, and there are no guns at Fort Hood. I mean, it's a joke. And so the 80 to 90% figure, a complete lie and completely made up, which is a nice segue to the next thing. The guy she cites, and these people cite, John Lott, a so-called academic who is a bought-off NRA fraud. You know, the list is so long, I would encourage people just to Google the guy if they care about this. Atrios, our friend Duncan Black, has had a lot of fun at his expense. I have, others have. This is a guy who, when he would go online for a couple of years, invented a sock puppet named Mary Roche that was one of his supposed students that would show up anywhere and say how amazing a professor and how brilliant he was until they discovered it was coming from the same IP address as everything he wrote. This is a guy who created a study on concealed carry where supposedly just brandishing a weapon scared somebody away 90% of the time, then couldn't recreate the study when other actual objective researchers asked him. Not only could he not recreate the study, he couldn't provide any evidence that the study had ever taken place. They just said to him, fine, give us the names of some of the respondents, the people that you interviewed. He couldn't do that because his computer had crashed, so he had no records, nothing. They couldn't find respondents. They couldn't find figures. They couldn't find anything because obviously this guy literally just made something up out of whole cloth. And on another occasion with one of this guy's studies, all of his coding errors and with the statistics were so bad and so wrong that once a bunch of other researchers took them and straightened them out, all of his findings were completely erased. So he's a liar and a fraud, and well, nobody takes him seriously outside of the right. He's anything but a liar and a fraud who the NRA directly pays to make up lies. So,
well, Cliff, let me just say this in response to that. First off, he's a professor, and you're Jewy.
That's a good point. Good point. Is that it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm waiting for the Ron Paul fan to show up here and tell me I look Jewy.
Right.
So
that's the only response there. I mean, you know, this is the thing. Is obviously they're just sort of, this is just like, you know, we have a professor who is, she's obviously not worried about people Googling this guy or knowing anything in the background of what he's saying. But I mean, I think that's obviously debunked, and you know.
I mean, and I think people who listen to your show would know this, but the right tries to play around with this, and so it's so important to get the stats out because of what we're talking about with Starbucks here, which is anywhere where there are guns. A huge study was just released last week by the Violence Policy Center. Where there are more guns, there's more gun violence. I know that's just common sense, but the studies say it too. Guns travel across state lines, the perfect example being the shooting that just happened, where the guy got his guns in Virginia, a very permissive market with very few regulations, and took them to Washington, because that's another favorite talking point of the right, which is Washington, D.C. and Chicago. Well, what you'll find when you look into that is that most of the guns arriving in Washington, D.C. used in murders are coming from Virginia or West Virginia, and most of the ones in Chicago are coming from Indiana. Because those are states that have basically, you know, if you have a pulse and sometimes not even that, you can get a hold of a gun. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, the best place you can ever study, because it's an easy, it provides an actual example, is Hawaii, where you cannot just drive a gun across state lines. And magically, I mean, I don't know how this happened, because of course, John Lott's right and everything he says, Hawaii has the lowest rate of gun ownership and the lowest rate of gun violence. So that's all important to know. With this, I'll say quickly, because I know you want to get into other topics. I've actually worked on the Starbucks case, if you want to call it that, on getting Starbucks to do some of what it just did. You know, Pete's Coffee and Tea, for example, another popular place, has banned guns and doesn't allow them. We were publicizing this for a while. I do consult for a group called the National Gun Victims Action Council, and we were letting people know, and we started about a year and a half ago. I wasn't consulting for them then. I haven't for a few months now. And we joined with Moms Demand Action, some other groups, and we're pointing out, well, you know, there have been two or three in the last few months accidental shootings where guns have just gone off in Starbucks and people have been shot. I don't know about you, Sam, I'm sure you'd love to grab your kids, you know, take them into a Starbucks and have somebody open carrying an assault weapon. That probably makes you feel comfortable drinking your coffee. And we were just telling people, you should know this, if you don't, that Starbucks will allow this. And in response, Starbucks has at least gone halfway, and they're not putting signs up banning it, but they're telling people that they don't want them there to bring guns in, or however they'll still serve them. And the key thing here is that's not the rule at Starbucks headquarters, where the corporate chieftains are. Starbucks headquarters, of course, they don't adhere to local law. They ban guns because they know that where there are more guns, more people get shot.
Right.
So happy to have you come visit us. Respect for their customers.
Yes. Happy to have you come visit us and perhaps sell us, you know, be our new sugar supplier or something. But just please don't carry your weapon into the meeting with us.
Right. So we're responding to Starbucks. This is great. Glad you're open-minded, Howard Schultz. By the way, Sandy Rios, that's Howard Schultz with an S. And, you know, great first step showing, you know, but this still doesn't cut it, because in the end, you can't put your safety ahead of the safety of your customers. And if you're going to ban it, you know, in your corporate headquarters because you realize what the statistics say, then you need to do the same thing in your stores. That simple.
Yeah,
so
I mean, it's pretty stunning. All right, well, let's look. We just have a couple of minutes here. I want to talk about we had mentioned this last week, the potential for a government shutdown. It appears now, I mean, just literally in the past hour, that this may not happen, and it's going to look more or less like the House is going to vote for a continuing resolution that extending the budget, in other words, that is going to attempt to defund Obamacare. It is going to go to the Senate, where the Republicans in the Senate have been crapping on the Republicans in the House, saying, you guys better man up and cut out Obamacare funding. But now
right.
in the
Senate. So we don't have to do it ourselves.
But now in the Senate, guys like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee, who have been making a stink about this, are saying, well, we're not going to, when they strip that part of it out of the bill, we're not going to filibuster it. We're just going to pretend to vote against it, but we're not going to stop it. Now, they could have stopped it. They could stop it until a government shutdown. If they wanted to do it, they could do it, but they're afraid to do it. So then it gets kicked back to the House, and where the reporting I've seen now is that Boehner will try and make some deal with his Republican caucus that, like, we're going to tie this into the debt ceiling, and that's where we're going to have the big fight, which is, you know, maybe in some respects more dangerous. So this has just been a stunning charade. And, you know, of course, they won't pay a political price with their base, because their base are morons.
Right. They're crazy morons. You know, that's sort of what if you read Paul Krugman's most recent column, he nailed it in sort of saying how Bobby Jindal had called and said we can't be the stupid party. And he was like, well, Jindal's right. They're not quite the stupid party. They're the crazy party. You know, there have been divided government in the past, and not since people were caning each other around the Civil War on the House floor. Do you have this where people are literally willing to blow up the country to get what they want? They're willing to destroy our economy. Nothing that they're saying that the crazies are saying makes any sense. And I had a feeling that the Boehners of the world and whatever, who's a right wing hack, you know, and a corrupt hack, and same with Mitch McConnell, but they're not crazy enough to want to shut down the government. These guys know how that goes. And I had a feeling they'd find a way for that not to happen, because polls clearly show they'll be blamed for it. People are just not as dumb as they seem to think everybody beyond their base is. And we talked about this in the past with McConnell's primary and Lamar Alexander and Lindsey Graham. They created this Frankenstein monster. And when you say Obamacare is the worst legislation in 50 years and there's death panels and you make up all sorts of garbage that's not true, you kind of have to live up to it, you know? And so they're being pressured to live up to it. That's sort of become one of these default positions, like not believing in any regulation of guns or not believing global warming exists. you know, and the rest is that they need to, is that if you're not willing to shut down the government, blow up the economy, do whatever necessary to stop this terrible, terrible bill that's going to give kids health care and give people with pre-existing conditions health care and all these other, and the rest, then, you know, if you're not willing to do that, then you're a wimp of some sort. And in the end, I think they will cave on this. It'll be interesting to see what will happen with the debt ceiling. But they're, all these guys are in a no-win situation. I mean, just a couple of them, you know, 15, 20 of them, you know, if you're a senator from Wyoming or something, you're probably pretty safe. But any of these guys that live in any states where there really are any people that are sane and have at least, you know, somewhat of, at least a year of a college education are going to have to explain all of this. And if Democrats finally get the damn messaging right on Obamacare, instead of just going out and saying it's Obamacare, but talk about the individual aspects of what this does for people, how it gets people health care, how it helps children, how it helps women, then these guys are dead. You know, let them run on this. I dare them.
I mean, you know, the thing is that, you know, and there's some reports, too, that the president is going to try and push Pelosi to deliver 50 votes for Boehner in the House to approve that final continuing resolution so that their people can still vote against it, but then just carry this fight to the debt ceiling. I hope to God that doesn't happen, because that would be just the ultimate weakness. But what ties in, what occurs to me about this, and, you know, what else, you know, aside from the fact that in some respects the Obama administration may let them off the hook on this government shutdown, is when we see stuff like this food stamp battle where the House yesterday voted 217 to I'm not sure what it was, 215 or so. Basically, every Republican except for 12 voted to cut food stamps. Basically, throw 3.5 million people off the rolls. I'll talk more about it, the specifics of this, as the show proceeds. But
$39 billion in cuts over 10 years.
$39 billion in cuts. It'll throw
let's call
off
it what it is too. Just to be clear, they're not cutting. They make it more abstract by just saying they're cutting food stamps. They're cutting $39 billion in food. That's what
right. They're
doing.
So it's 3.5 million people this year, and then 3 million people over the next 10 years. And it's people who have been out of work for an extended period of time. There are people who have received, whose states have applied to the federal government for a waiver on these restrictions that came in during the Clinton welfare program, which I've mentioned in the past was a horrible piece of work, because when you get into a situation where you have such massive unemployment, you need the ability to help people. And this is just one of the cruelest things possible. But what it's going to do is it's going to end up, you know, and I was on Hayes last night talking about this. This part of the conversation we had off of, but it sets it opens up the parameters of the debate where it becomes reasonable to cut a little bit of food stamps, where the Senate cutting, you know, $4 million as opposed to 40 over 10 years just on administrative costs, which of course end up, you know, denying some people food stamps, becomes the reasonable position. And
right.
And
this
what,
is what
should,
the right is so good at expanding the window by putting nuttiness out there.
But this is where the Democrats, where it exposes the Democrats of being not just a weak need per se, but frankly, a centrist party in its aggregate form. In other words, if
a what party? I'm
a
sorry,
centrist party. Because,
oh yeah. Yep.
Because if you are in the Senate, controlled by Democrats, and the House is sending you a bill to defund Obamacare as part of the continuing resolution, you should be trying to attach to that Senate bill that goes back to the House a single payer for all. Single
That's
payer
right.
Medicare. And so make them deal with a version of this, which we should say by any reasonable measure, and I'm talking in terms of what the American population expresses through polls, would be more or less an acceptable position for the American public. Have a single payer for all, Medicare for all. Medicare buy-in at 55 you could add to this, and force them to vote against that. But they don't.
That's right.
They don't.
And we should be doing that all the damn time with all of this stuff. again, like, you know, we let them get away with these abstractions.
But it's not letting them get away. It is because the Democratic Party still, and you know, we've seen some progress, at least on the sort of the banking front, that is measurable in this rejection of Larry Summers coming out of the Senate. We're seeing some of it grow, but obviously it needs to grow faster and bigger.
Right. Well, it's growing on the left. We had this conversation with the new left. I think overall, it's growing within the caucus, the willingness to be more left. And when I say that, I mean within the Democratic Party in general. It's growing from people outside. But yes, it does need to grow faster, because the truth is every damn time they put up something, like the classic example right now, where we're doing something smart, is on Social Security, where these bastards have tried to cut Social Security. They tried for a while, and we were just saying no. And then we realized, let's add to Social Security. So our response now is, no, we're going to increase it. You know, and then maybe the worst place you end up is it stays the same. And that is what we need to be doing on every single issue. When they want to push the Overton window one way, we should push it the other way. The problem is we've got a president and sort of, you know, as we discussed, what mindset he's in still, even though he's got a coalition growing on the left, he still embraces this sort of centrist approach, and he still has repeated right-wing messaging about spending being bad and spending in the abstract. I mean, it just shouldn't be called spending. It should be called kids' food and kids' health care and women's health care. And let's call these things what they are. And, you know, you're not cutting spending. You're cutting women's health care. You want women to not be able to get breast exams, so there's more breast cancer and more women die. That is what you want. You know, you're trying to cut Obamacare right now. That's what helps fund the CHIP program. You want kids who otherwise their lives could be saved, who will get simple illnesses. You want them to die from lack of health care. That is what you want, because you think it's more important to not allow them to have that. I mean, we need to respond not only in the proper language, but we need to respond by making the argument affirmatively in favor of government, what government does, and then arguing for more of it.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Cliff Schechter, everyone. Cliff, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, my man.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep.
Cliff Schechter, folks. All right. We're going to take a brief musical interlude. And when we return, we will be talking to Dean Abdallah, the comedian commentator, and one of the subjects of the movie. And I don't know if he made the movie or is just one of the subjects of the movie. We're going to have to talk about it. Wow, look at who's – well, we'll talk about this in just a moment. We'll be back with him in a second. And well, that's it. I've just turned on the IM for the app. We'll get to your phone calls and your IMs in just a moment. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program comedian, commentator, CNN. Are you a CNN contributor?
No, I write CNN opinion articles, but I'm not a formal contributor.
Oh, in other words, an indentured servant to the behemoth that is
exactly.
CNN. Dean Abdallah.
I'm trying to write my way into freedom. I'm just trying to write enough articles to get free. It's another 400 articles. I'm free at CNN, I think. But thanks for having me on, Sam. Thanks. I'm glad to be a minority on the Majority Report. It's always nice.
Yes, there you go. The Muslims are coming.
Bingo. They're here. Wake up, America. Hide your beer. Hide your pork. We're coming for it. That's now, how it's going to be.
This is a film was funded on Kickstarter, yeah?
It's funded by Kickstarter, you said?
Yeah, is that right?
Partly. Probably about $40,000, and the film probably cost about three times that. But it definitely did help the community, and people from all over wanted to help and give us money. We're really happy to do that. And it's a comedy documentary. Even half the money is from Hamas, and part of it's from Hezbollah. But you got to get your money where you get it. It's a tough market out there, right, Sam?
Well,
today.
Now, that's okay. That's okay as long as they're funding you, right? I mean, if you're not funding them, you're all right. You're all right. They're just providing. This is
right.
Their outreach program. So, wait, now, did you make the film? I know you're in the film.
Yeah. I'm in it. I co-directed and co-produced it.
Excellent.
There's too many things to do, and it's out. It's coming out today in New York for a week run. It ran last week in L.A. and Chicago and Seattle. But Tuesday it comes out of iTunes and Video On Demand and Amazon download. So anyone in the country, and like 30 countries as well, can see it on iTunes starting Tuesday for $4.99. You can't beat that. You can rent it for $4.99. Bingo.
That's awesome. I can do it on my Apple TV. We've already done our movie recommendation of the week from you. But tell us about the film. And let me reiterate, it's his cell phone, folks. It's not our phone service. You're a little bit scratchy. It's fine. We can understand you. I just want to make it clear. Because, you know, I get a lot of grief. That's not your fault.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I'm going to have to get a new cell phone plan after this. Maybe the government is listening in now more because the Muslims are coming. Bingo, goes to the NSA filter, and now it doesn't sound as good on radio. So if you make a movie, the Muslims are coming, you're pretty sure, you're confident the government's listening to your stuff. At this point, you know, I don't even mind anymore.
All right, well, tell us what the film is.
The film is really simply, the simple part of it is a comedy documentary. We went to the South with our five Muslim comedians and the West and performed all free shows because we want the people to come out who are just curious. If you're going to pay, you're only going to be people who like Muslims, frankly. It's free. You might be on the fence about Muslims, but you're like, it's free. I'll go check it out. And we did a lot of street action stuff. We set up like an Ask a Muslim table in the streets of Georgia and Alabama, and we played game, name that religion. We went bowling with people. We did everything we can to reach out and answer questions people had about Muslims. And it's not a Borat-type film. It really is much more earnest than that. We didn't go out. The only people we make fun of are the real Muslim haters, like the ones on Fox News and Brian Fisher from AFA and Pat Robertson and those people, politicians. But the average person we met, we answered their questions. And they had a lot of interesting questions. Some people had tough questions for us.
Tell me about some of those. I'm curious about some of those, you know, those exchanges.
Well, the number one question we got, or comment, was a combination of question and comment and suggestion throughout the entire South and the West is why don't they hear Muslims denouncing terrorism more? And you think like 10, 11 years after 9/11, we were shooting this. You're like, well, come on, you get it. American Muslims are not on board with that kind of terrorism, but they had not heard it enough. So we addressed that in the film, and that was really a learning, something for me to learn, because I thought most of them were like, yeah, I get it. You don't like the terrorists. They have not heard. Some of you have never heard a Muslim denounce 9/11. It actually came up in the movie on several occasions, or terrorism in general, and that they don't, we despise them. And then we're not the exception, because they're always like, oh, you're a Muslim. No, we're not the exception. But the terrorists are the exception. They're the teeny, tiny number out there causing bad things, which we have to answer for. So, you know, part of it, could we despise the terrorists? Then there were other questions, too, like Nagin Farsad is my co-director, female Iranian-American comedian, and dresses sometimes rather flashy or, like, seductive in a way that normal, which would be typical New York there, but people around the country are like, how can you dress like that? You're a Muslim woman. Don't you have to cover up? And many people actually think all Muslim women have to wear a head covering or dress a certain way. And Nagin makes a good point about that. We had other female Muslim comedians on the tour that made the point about that misconception people have. It's a choice for each person whether to cover up or not. Unless they're being forced to. It's, you know, in America, it's generally a choice. You want a head cover, you want to dress any way you want. There's nothing in the Quran that demands women to cover. This talks about modesty. You can define that any way you want, modesty.
Well, all right. So, Dean, let me ask you this, okay? And so as sort of, I mean, you've got these people who are living in areas where there's not a big Muslim population, or to the extent that there is, it's segregated from their experiences. It should obviously not be up to Muslims to prove that they are not terrorists. But I mean, On some level, what you guys were doing is going around and making the case, you know, if only just by look at us, talk to us, we're not going to sit here and beg you to believe that we're not terrorists, but it should be fairly obvious. I mean, it seems to me that that more of this would be good if only to defang the sort of the engine that drives the political impetus to demonize Muslims.
That's part of it. And, you know, the movie is really not even out yet. We got attacked by three right-wing publications. Breitbart.com wrote a really calling it essentially, they actually entitled it Cultural Jihad. So apparently I'm now a comedy jihadist. That's really their words. It's unreal.
Well, wait a second. Breitbart.com is still in existence?
It's still in existence. The Washington Times wrote a scathing article saying, oh, and they didn't even see the movie. They go, we know from the list of people in it, because John Stewart's in it, Janine Garofalo, your old radio partner's in it, and Lewis Black, and Rachel Maddow, and Russell Simmons. So, yeah, there are a lot of liberals in the movie. So if they would call us up and ask us why they're no conservatives, we would have said, we asked everyone. I begged people at Fox News to let us interview Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Judge Napolitano and even other people, Pat Roberts. And we said we would give them the questions. We're not playing games. Our goal is to have a conversation, not to play gotcha or to make them look like idiots. And we promised them they could have a publicist in, they could stop the interview, whatever. They all said, one after the other said, no, they do not want to be challenged. They want to sell their rancid goods to America and not be challenged or even have a reasonable conversation about the issue. And that's what we told them. We said, we're not here to make fun of you guys. And we were being sincere. I mean, we really tried to do this as upfront as possible. And when they wouldn't come in this room, then we had to use clips of them saying horrible stuff about Muslims on TV. And I love audiences already played in L.A. and Seattle are laughing at the bigot. And to me, that's the biggest fear. They want you to be mad with them or at them. They don't want you laughing at them. That undermines their credibility. And that's, so to me, I'm so happy about that part of the film. That,
wait,
you know,
now,
people are laughing at them.
Are you going to screen the film? Is the film going to screen in the same areas or type of areas that you guys toured in?
It's the theatrical runs are only in the bigger cities, like in 5-6 cities altogether. But it will be available through iTunes anywhere in the country. There's this program called TUG. It's a kind of newer thing, TUGG.com, where people can request screenings anywhere they want, as long as they, like, 50 people sign up for it. This company that deals with, so there's going to be some screenings all over the place. And then we'll still do colleges with it. And we want to go back to some of the places we did it before. It's just about a cost or not. I mean, we did the whole tour for free, meaning, you know, we went into a lot of debt to do this. We were in, like, a lot of debt. So to go back, I want to go back and play it in Georgia and Tennessee and Mississippi.
Did you guys make an app for the film? You make an app?
We didn't make an app. We don't have an app. Yeah. I like a Muslim app. Just convert to Islam by pressing with it. That's great. I like that idea. Sam, we're going to use that in the future. But
that's a great way of going into debt.
It was a great project. At least it was an act of restriction over a day. And I enjoyed it. It was really eye-opening. We met so many open-minded people. I went to the South at preconception. I'm going to be honest. I was down there thinking,
hey, Dean, hold on one second. I want to hear this part, but just back your face away from the phone just a little bit. That might help it a little bit.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead. So, I know what preconceptions you went with. I mean, come on, you're from New York. Now we should tell people are you born and raised in New York? I mean, I know a big part of your family is still in the occupied territories.
Right. They are my dad's Palestinian. He was born in what was then Palestine, because he was born in the late 20s. And I have a lot of family there. My mom's Italian and from Sicily, and I have relatives in occupied Sicily over there. And I am from New Jersey, born and raised in Jersey, and I live in New York City now for like 15 years.
So what were the preconceptions? That everybody would be hayseeds?
Right. I mean, yeah, I could joke around and go, they're going to be open-minded and stuff. No, I really went there because we went to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, where there's a big anti-mosque controversy that was going on at the time. And it was just tapering down when we got there. About 6 months before, it tapered down a little. And we went to other places in the South where there were people. We went to Terry Jones' home in Gainesville, Florida. We actually went on his property. We did a show in
Terry Jones, we should say, is the Christian
Quran burner.
Minister who Quran burning, and he's as far as I know, he's up on federal charges right now for driving around last week or 2 weeks ago with like 2,000 Qurans soaked in gasoline in the back end of his pickup truck.
Right, I think he had like 3,000 actually, and he was doing anything to get press. We went when we did the show in Gainesville. It was packed. I mean, it was free, but like 400 people standing in this recreation center, and they came there to tell us that Terry Jones doesn't represent them.
Uh-huh.
So all of us are fighting against being defined by the worst in our community, and the people in Gainesville and all different faiths came out, and we had very small amount of Muslims come to these shows. We went to places where there weren't Muslims, and we were trying to reach out to non-Muslims. And overwhelmingly, it was mostly Christians, some atheists, some Jews here and there. We had Scott Blakeman in some of the shows. I think you might know Scott.
Yeah.
Funny Jewish American political comic. Great guy. Ultimately, I think there's more Jews in the film than Catholic, than Muslims, because there is like John Stewart and Lewis Black and some of that David Cross. So a lot of more progressive Jewish people.
Jewish comedy is really misunderstood in this country, I think.
You need a film.
You
guys got to get together and make a film one of these days. There's no Jewish people making films.
No, there's got to be.
One day you'll break into business. I hope you make it in a business, you guys, one of these days.
We could raise the money on Schtickstarter. I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. But let me ask you this about the film. You mentioned that the film is full of interviews from some both news and comedy luminaries. I see you also Keith Ellison, Russell Simmons, but I see you have Asif Manvi, who people may know from the
Daily
Show, or maybe they saw the first version of Beat Cops. That's very few people
there.
But Rachel Maddow, David Cross, you got Liz Winstead, Cenk Uygur. I mean, I'm looking at all these names, and I'm just wondering, like, what? I mean, maybe something got lost in the spam filter on my end. I mean, why not interview my wife? I mean, honestly, like, you know, like, what? I don't know.
We went alphabetical. We were getting to the essence. We got the Stewart. Oh, that's right.
Janine Garofalo was in there. I mean, you sort of, where's Cliff Schechter? I mean, where's, why not my producers on the Majority Report?
We didn't know how to get you. We said to John Stewart, like, how do you get Sam Seder? And he's like, Sam Seder, come on, stop dreaming.
Right.
You know, so.
That's true. Yeah, I know. Stewart knows that you don't even make overtures, buddy. Door's closed.
Don't even try, but,
if we
make a sequel, which my dream is, to do the Muslims Take Manhattan. I'm going to team up with the Muppets, take over Manhattan. This is my big thing, except for Miss Piggy, for obvious reasons, being pork. She can't be on the tour. But everyone else, bingo, they're with us. We're going to have a nice tour.
Did you try and get Pam Geller in the film?
We did. We actually, I emailed Geller and Robert Spencer. Spencer said yes at first. Geller called me an Islamophobe and said, how dare you make a movie about Muslims? I don't like your title. You hate Muslims. I'm like, you despise Muslims. You're telling me, I'm like, what are you, crazy?
Wait a second. Wait.
She tweeted calling me a Muslim hater.
Wait a second.
And I had the tweet.
Wait a second. Pam Geller, the nut job, with all due respect, from Atlas Shrugged. Is that it or what is it? Whatever. Atlas. Atlas Shrugs. The woman who ginned up the entire fake controversy about a Muslim community center with a chapel in it, four blocks from the perimeter of Ground Zero. The woman who goes on and screams about Sharia law taking over in this country, she accused you of being an Islamophobe?
She did, and in writing, in Twitter, and I saved the tweet and had retweeted it a few times, like a year ago when we were doing interviews.
That's something you print out and you put on your wall, for God's sakes.
I did. I really enjoyed it. And Spencer wanted to be interviewed. Even Terry Jones wanted the interview. These people, you don't understand. I mean, there's a report that came out yesterday. These people make their money. They're living from hating Muslims.
Right.
They have books. They lecture tours. It's a financial, pecuniary interest in keeping this going. Because some people go like, well, they're doing a service. Why would they do it if it's not true? They're literally making a living from doing it. That's why. And they're going to move on to some other group. You know, if we're going to be replaced. I mean, our history in America tells us, look, anti-Semitism was part of mainstream discourse. Politicians use it. Father Coughlin, famously in the 30s. Then it was marginalized. Then you had anti-Catholicism. And John Kennedy, even in 1960, had a deal with things that started in the 1800s. It's been marginalized. Homophobia. Racism, it still exists in America, but it's getting more and more marginalized. You can't there's not two sides to homophobia or gay bashing anymore. And at one point, there's not two sides to being anti-Semitic. Because at one point, there probably was. People come on and go, oh, Jews, they're not going to follow American law. And they said that about John Kennedy. There were two sides. Right now, there are two sides to Muslims in America. Right. You can say, you can demonize it and be on the news, and you're not considered a bigot. But it's getting there where they're getting more and more increasingly marginalized. And the future for them is the same future as all the anti-Semites and the anti-Catholic people and the homophobes and racists. They're going to be on the fringes. They're going to be still be there. They're going to have their meetings with 30 people in the bottom of a bar, like Fight Club, and hang out. And that's really, they have every right to hate. It's America. You have your right to hate. I just hope you're not on the mainstream media doing it. That's all. Just do it in the basement.
I picked up, I've actually, you know, I have to say, though, I've picked up some slight, like a whiff of Islamophobia from just the way that you're talking about this.
Me, I do. It's not a phobia, because they tell you, you know, it's a real fear. That's the Islamophobia. I don't like to call it Islamophobia. I just call it Muslim hating.
Right.
Muslim bashers. Like, to me, it's just hate. Islamophobia makes it seem like
it's a point. And that's their complaint. It's not irrational. Our hatred of you people is not irrational.
It was, you know, so it's remarkable when you have like this earnest effort to build bridges and you have Breitbart, you know, with Geller writing an article for them. And you read the comments, you want to puke, but then read an article about Jews and you read the comments, you want to throw up the same way.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there are haters in America who just don't like any minority. Read an article about immigrants. Oh, my God. You know, it's unreal.
Well, Dean, I appreciate you coming on. It is, I'm
going
to be able to download on iTunes.
$4.99. I wish I had a promotional code. I would give you a promotional code. I don't have one. It's but iTunes Tuesday and Amazon downloads and cable VOD. You can start rolling out the cable VOD different systems starting this Tuesday. And if people live in New York, it's playing this whole week. It opens tonight at the Quad Cinema on 13th Street.
All right, great. The Muslims are coming. Dean, thanks so much for coming on today. All right,
thank you,
folks. We're going to do a Freebie Friday today. Is that now right?
Sounds good to me.
And the way you can thank us, Freebie listeners, is if you haven't already, download the app.
That's right. Actually, we're not going to do Freebie Friday.
No?
No. We're not going to do Freebie Friday. What we're going to do is we are going to say that you need to download the app to listen to this. Now, we have no way of enforcing that in any way. But if you're not going to download the app,
shut off the show now.
I want you to stop the show now.
It's an honor system.
It's an honor system. If you're not going to download the app and you still hear my voice, you understand that you're going to have to live with this. You're going to look in the mirror. You're going to look at your kids or your parents or your cousins or the barista that you're getting your coffee from. And you're going to know in your heart that you didn't download the app, either the Android version or the iPhone or iPad version. Now, listen, if you don't have a smartphone, if you don't have one of those things, then you're good. You're fine. You don't have to do it. You are absolved.
Tell your tech savvy friends to download it then.
Yeah, actually, if you don't have an app and you don't have one of those things, you got to tell other people because you know people who do. And this is the easiest way to promote the show to your friends. No longer like, it's a podcast, you got to go and sync up your computer and you got to do this and you got to do that. You don't even have to say podcast. I'm starting to not use the word podcast anymore. It is a radio show. I mean, we do replay on terrestrial radio in D.C. and a couple other, outfits. It's not a big part of our revenue structure. In fact, there's no revenue from it. But this is a radio show, and it's no longer just, it's a podcast. It's a radio show you can listen to via an app. So I'm going to give you another couple of seconds to make a decision. I want you to say to yourself, am I really going to download this app? Or am I really going to tell one other person? That's all you have to do. One other person to download the app, listen to the show. And if you're not going to do that, I want you to turn off the thing now. Here is here's a little music to just give you a moment to shut it down. This will be your outro music.
That's very insulting outro music.
Well, I'm sorry. If there's a decision you're going to make, it's a decision you're going to make. I'm not chastising you, but I'm not going to give you, like, quality outro music. Are they gone?
They may be.
All right.
Hopefully they are.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See you guys later.